Okay, are we ready? We do?
Okay.
Order, Senator Marty, this meeting of the State and Local Government Operations and Oversight Committee. First bill on the agenda is Senate File 481. Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, I was waiting for an amendment to come from upstairs. So can I?
Where's Senator Anderson then? Senator Foley. Go get. Senator Foley brings us Senate File 3362, Police Officer Disciplinary Hearing Representation Provisions Modification.
Senator Thank you, Foley. Madam Chair and members. Senate File 3362 is an amendment. I'm looking for an A1 amendment, and I'd like to have somebody move that.
Is there an A1 amendment? Senate File 3362.
There's one in our packet. I take it this is the first step.
This is the bill as introduced. Is this the first stop?
Yes, Madam Chair, it is the first stop.
Madam Chair, I'll move the A1 amendment.
Senator Betzel moves the A1 amendment. Is it the lead everything amendment? But the bill itself is just a paragraph. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Okie doke. Senator Foley.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The Peace Officers Bill of Rights is the keynote to this particular legislation, and the law currently provides that an officer has the right to be represented by a union representative or an attorney during an investigative interview for which a statement is to be used as evidence against the officer. The proposed amendment would require the investigator to allow the officer, if he or she chooses, to be represented by a union representative and an attorney. I have Brian Rice from the Minneapolis Police Federation will speak to it on the particular amendment.
Actually, the delete everything is just clarifying the intent. Is that not right?
Yes, ma'am.
I mean, there's really no big difference in what you're asking for. Mr. Rice, if you'd identify yourself and just give us very brief testimony, I think the issue is very clear.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Brian Rice, representing the Police Officers Federation of Minneapolis. Madam Chair, members of the committee, we do bring this bill forward as really a clarification. Many agencies do allow both a union representative and attorney to appear. The reason why this is necessary is that when these investigations occur, it may be that an officer is facing two potential issues, not only discipline from his employer, but potentially because of his conduct, he may be in trouble with the criminal law. We think it's appropriate to have both a union representative who understands that issue there, along with, if the officer chooses, an attorney of his own.
Are there questions for Senator Foley or Mr. Rice? Senator Lori.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's three sentences here. The first two are pretty careful to say attorney or officer or both. The third one just says attorney or union representative. Should that say or both as well? I'm just curious.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Rice.
Senator Lori, I think not, in that the by the time we get to the third sentence, it's pretty clear that if an officer could have both there, then they would both be in the room. And by the time we get to the third part, the statement can't be taken until the reasonable opportunity is provided for the officer to obtain the attorney or the union representative. So it's kind of but it's a good point. I think it's clear, though, from the preceding two sentences that.
Okay. Senator Lori, is there any further questions for Senator Foley? Is there anybody in the audience who wishes to speak either in favor or in opposition to Senate File 3362 as amended? Seeing none, Senator Lori moves that Senate File 3362 as amended be recommended to pass. All those who are in favor of that, yes. and be referred to the Committee on Judiciary. As many are as in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is passed and referred to the Committee on Judiciary. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
You bet. Senator Marty will let us know when he has his amendment. Senator Anderson brings us Senate File 2876, Dangerous Dogs Provisions Modifications.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson, we have the first engrossment. This bill also needs to go to the Judiciary Committee when the proper motion is made. Are there any amendments that you have before you discuss the bill?
Madam Chair, I believe Council has a technical amendment.
We have the A4 amendment.
Got the big Marty bill up today.
First of all, Senator Anderson, before we take that up, which issues are there that bring the bill to this committee?
I don't think they're related to the amendment.
No, I know.
Chair.
We'll come back. That's why I'm asking. We'll come back to that.
Make some changes to current law that relates to responsible ownership of dogs. Thank you. And it one of the things that it does that is related to your jurisdiction in particular is to change the enforcement and overseeing of these laws to animal control, to take it from counties to animal control. And it's my understanding that everybody's very happy with that arrangement, that it would be the counties are happy to not have this be part of their responsibilities, and the animal control agencies are very well suited to handle the responsibilities under this law. And so that's a big part of it. There's also a section that clarifies that local governments.
Where is the section that
you want me to go? Okay.
Does the counties to the animal control?
There's a number, Madam Chair, there's a number of sections that change. It just county is stricken
it's
and
all,
animal
it's
control.
All throughout.
It's all throughout.
And what is the animal control authority?
Well, it's a maybe Mr. Forbes can help answer that. If it's defined in law, I do not know. He's with the Animal Control Association, but that's your local, dog pound or animal control entity at
maybe
the local level
council.
Would take
Where
responsibility.
Where is animal control authority defined in the law?
Madam Chair, that term is already defined in law, and I'll find the exact
much.
Section reference for you.
Oh, here it is.
Basically, local unit of government can determine who the animal control authority is going to be. It's someone they can. It's an agent of the local unit of government.
Madam Chair, I've got it right here.
Okay.
Minnesota Statutes 347.50 sub 7 defines animal control authority as an agency of the state, county, municipality, or other governmental subdivision of the state, which is responsible for animal control operations in its jurisdiction.
So, by moving the jurisdiction, if you will, from the counties in some regard to an animal control authority, that animal control authority could be in the city or the township or the state or whatever, right?
I believe
so. Why don't the counties want it?
Well, I think it creates some more uniformity because there's some, you know, the animal control agencies are already doing a lot of the enforcement of these laws,
mm-hmm.
but just to make it uniform, it makes sense for all of these laws to be
with an animal control authority at some level. It's always going to be there.
Yes.
Okay, is there anything else that brings the bill here?
Well, I think there's two sections relating to state versus local laws, and there's a section of law already that says that local units of government can pass stricter requirements regulating the ownership of dogs. And
there's no statewide preemption.
There's no statewide preemption, and this doesn't change that. It just has some clarifying language.
Okay.
And finally, the very last section of the bill, called applicability, makes it clear that the state law that's been on the books for a number of years that we're amending that this represents a statewide law and that counties do not have to specifically adopt it by ordinance for it to take effect.
And are there any other questions on the jurisdictional issues for Senator Anderson for this bill? We usually just allow amendments from our members, or at least encourage amendments from our members, only on jurisdictional issues, but this one is not on that. Is that correct, the A4? This is at your request?
Madam Chair, this was suggested by counsel.
Okay.
I really...
Let's look and see where it is.
It's just a technical...
Technical amendment on 623.
Prohibits that.
That would be then...
That prohibits. Grammatical.
It just adds a that.
Yes, it just prohibits a... Prohibits that person. Is that what it is?
Yeah, that prohibits.
That person from owning a dog. And then on page 6...
Seven.
On page 7, line 7... after location where the dog will reside, and it's just clarifying that.
It is just clarifying language.
It's truly a technical amendment. Senator Loring?
I was going to say, these are where the dog will reside is one that came up in Ag and Vet Affairs, too, and we missed one instance of it. I would move this amendment.
Senator Loring moves the A4 amendment. Is there any discussion on the A4 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A4 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. We now have Senate File 2876 as amended before us. Are there further questions or comments from members? Senator Vickerman.
Madam Chair, I want to be sure that we don't confuse this with the puppy mill or the breed of dogs. This is strictly a dangerous dog bill, period.
Right. Yes, this is
I
not
want to be sure
about,
everybody understands that.
This is not about prohibiting ownership of specific breeds, and it is not about registering breeders with regard to preventing puppy mills, so-called puppy mills. This
Madam
bill does
Chair,
not deal with those issues.
That's exactly correct, Madam Chair. This is not a breed-specific bill, and this just tightens up some areas of law to ensure that where a dog is dangerous, that owner will have to take responsibility and be accountable for those actions and to give them some due process rights along the way.
Senator Anderson and Madam Chair, I think, and just to be even more clear, I think this is the bill that originally had the breed-specific. It is not, and
Madam
it was
Chair,
amended to take that out?
Madam Chair, I never authored that bill. I did not want to author that
good.
Bill.
Good, good. I thought it was correct.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, there was a lot of discussion in my community that I represent about the issue because there were several vicious dog attacks over the last year, and so there was a lot of discussion about a breed-specific bill, and I was interested in carrying this bill because it was an alternative that I thought was really made more sense and really dealt with the problem, which is the dangerous owners.
Yes.
Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for Mr. Forbes. Mr. Forbes, the city of Apple Valley, which is a city I represent, they went through an extensive process, public input, and passed a city ordinance last year, I believe it was, dealing with this whole issue. And it sounds like it was very much in line with what this bill is today. I thought that they did a pretty good job on that. They didn't ban specific breeds. They went after owner responsibility. Do you know through your association anything about the specifics of that particular city ordinance? And this does. And do you know, is this going to this will allow them to continue to do what they're going to do? This shouldn't cause any problem with what the city of Apple Valley just passed?
Mr. Forbes, you need to identify yourself, please, for the record, and then you may respond to Senator Gerlach's question.
Thank you. I'm Bill Forbes. I'm the Secretary-Treasurer of Minnesota Animal Control Association, or MACA, which is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization of animal control personnel whose main mission is to provide information and training to animal control people. Madam Chair, Senator Gerlach, I have spoken with a few people about what was going on in Apple Valley, and as far as I understand, that shouldn't be any kind of a problem.
Are there other questions or comments for Senator Anderson? She does have a witness here, Mr. Forbes, from the Animal Control Association. Is there anyone who would other any other person who wishes to speak in support or in opposition to Senate File 2876 as amended? Seeing none, Senator Vickerman.
Madam Chair, I will move that Senate File 2876 be recommended to pass with the understanding, Senator Anderson, that the bill stays a dangerous dog and not breeds, and which sometimes happens. I'll count on you for that. So I'll move the bill.
Senator Vickerman moves that Senate File 2876 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Judiciary. Any further discussion? All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator
Chair.
Anderson.
Senator Vickerman,
Senator Marty, are you ready now?
I've got so many phone calls and letters.
Senator Marty brings us Senate File 481, Low Emission Vehicles, California Standards Adoption. This bill has been requested by a number of committees. It is going to go to transportation first.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
If it passes.
Senate File 481 is a bill that would move the Minnesota new automobiles there, so they're only new automobiles, would be required to, instead of meeting the EPA standards, they would be required to meet tougher standards that were adopted in California.
And Senator Marty, why is the bill before?
The bill is before us because, you know, the PCA would adopt rules in here, and those rules would be under, I believe it's Subdivision 1, Clause 3 of the rulemaking section, would be allowing them to use the good cause exemption, which is being done because they are adopting an entire set. There's no policy-making decision involved in it. They would be required to adopt the entire set. And the reason for that is that the federal government, when they adopted the Clean Air Act, they said everybody would naturally be covered by federal law. But because California already had standards in place, other states could choose to adopt California standards as an alternative. And again, they don't have the agency does not have decision-making authority in terms of what they'll take and what the standards should be. It's that they take the standards, period. So that's the purpose for the bill being here. I'd be happy to answer questions about it or specifically about the rulemaking as well.
Are there questions for Senator Marty about the rulemaking issues here?
Madam Chair?
Senator Betzel.
I'm trying to understand the bill myself now.
Okay.
I mean, why California, and how do we know what California regulations say? I mean, I need to be brought up to speed on this. You're assuming I know things that I don't.
Terry Marty, you want to explain
the
relationship between the regulations and the federal law and why there's the reference to the California regulations rather than putting the California regulations into Minnesota statutes?
Madam Chair, Senator Betzel, because of the fact that we have to adopt them in their entirety, there are a couple of severable provisions that we can not choose, but for the rest of them, we have to accept them in their entirety because the federal government obviously doesn't want to have 50 different types of standards for cars. So you have the choice between the EPA or the California standards. And the reason for doing it through rulemaking is that if the California board makes some changes in it, we could adopt it through the rule changes. And again, the bill has at least one exception here that if the California agency decides to add other vehicles to it, we would be defaulting back to the federal standards. But it would be through rulemaking because of the fact that if there are changes that we don't have to come back for legislation at that time.
But, Madam Chair, I can understand why,
Senator Betzel,
why 50 different states are not allowed to all come up with standards so that Detroit has to, you know, make 50 different cars, modify their standards for each state. But I'm not familiar. Why is California allowed to set their own unique standards as opposed to the other 49 states?
Madam Chair, they were exempted by Congress because when they passed the Federal Clean Air Act, California already had standards. There are now I think it's 12 states that have adopted the California standards. Six more are in process. It can be done administratively. It wouldn't require legislative action. But there are something like 18 states are in the process of getting it. And we have, in other words, the federal government decided rather than one set of standards, they're willing to live with two. So we have a choice between the two.
Senator Betzel?
Is that something Congress decides, which states?
Madam Chair, yes. Party? They exempted California, so they were the only state exempted, but other states are allowed to choose which of the two standards they want. So it's our choice between EPA and California.
One more question.
Senator Betzel?
So other states, have the other states gotten the congressional exemption, or have other states adopted the California standards?
Senator Betzel, they've adopted the California standards, which states we are allowed to do this. It does not require congressional approval for us to adopt California. We either choose California or we stay with the federal ones. And, again, those states that have already done so, they either legislatively or administratively adopted those standards.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions for Senator Marty about the thrust of this bill? Senator Gerlach.
Madam Chair, we're talking about California emission standards. I haven't followed this issue. I know nothing about it. So, and I don't think our committee is getting all involved in that, but we're supposed to apparently just do the small piece of it, whether we're going to adopt all the rules or not. But I have no idea the difference between federal standards and California standards. How are we supposed to judge and decide that the California standards are superior?
Senator Gerlach, I think the issue before us is whether we think it is proper for the state of Minnesota to adopt a body of law through reference to another state's rules or legislation. And if we think that's proper, a proper activity for our state, rather than talking about the substance of those, I mean, we're not that kind of a committee with regard to
committee of the whole.
To rulemaking, and it may well be that you don't feel comfortable enough in allowing that, regardless of the substance of the rulemaking. But I think that's the issue before us, before this committee, as opposed to, what other kinds of, you know, whether you want to talk about the Clean Air Law or things like that. That Clean Air Act is not before. And if we get into the substance of everything, then we're in trouble, it seems to me.
Madam Chair?
I don't know if that's helpful or not. Senator Pappas?
In line with what you're talking about, I was going to ask the question about whether this is common that we adopt another state's laws. And I noticed that Mr. Bodern did, at the end of his memo, his description of the bill, did talk about that Senate File 41 is not unique in requiring that an agency incorporate laws from other states within rule. And then he gives several examples of where that's done.
Oh, thank you. That's maybe that would be
helpful.
On the back of the sheet, Senator Gerlach, we have done this before.
And, Madam Chair, if Senator Gerlach was asking the direction of the California standards, they are more stringent than the federal ones. And a lot of the states that picked them up were after 2002 when California adopted greenhouse gas emissions reduction standards. So it is more stringent. The question is, do we want to be more stringent to protect the environment or not? And that's the choice we would be making here.
Madam Chair.
Senator Betzel?
As I'm reading through the bill summary, though, I don't see quite an analogous situation where we're adopting standards that some other state has set. Some state has set some standards, and then we just say whatever they do, we adopt the very same standards. I can understand, you know, the Internal Revenue Code, some other national model codes that – even a model code, we can change those things throughout the country, but it seems to me we may be ceding, you know, our authority over to the state of California, which may or may not be a good idea, but I don't know that I have any clue what those standards are, so it's kind of hard to decide whether this is a good idea or not.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Senator Betzold, again, that's the choice we're given by the federal government. We can adopt one or the other. What we're asking for is, because of the urgency of some issues like climate change issues, that we be allowed to have stricter standards. And, yes, we would be doing it the same way. We cannot control what the EPA does. We cannot control what they do. They've been very sensitive to the fact that they are the alternative model, because they've been, when people have questions for them from other states, they try and be helpful. They recognize that now, I believe, close to half of the nation's population will be within a few months under the California CARA standards. And so, again, they're sensitive to it. They're not trying to do something outrageous, and when they do it, they're doing it with several years' lead time. So if we found some decision they made in the future that was so onerous to us, or we felt the federal standards were now better, we would have the chance to move back, which I think we would choose to do.
Okay. Did you want to have these people testify?
Madam Chair, I believe two of the witnesses were in opposition to the bill, and Mr. Urkel is here, I think, mainly to answer questions. It depends how much you want to get into of the substance or...
Okay. Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Urkel from the Center for Environmental Advocacy, who is here in support of the bill? Seeing none, I will call on Eric Hyland and Alyssa Schlander, if you'd like to come to the table, both of you, take your testimony. You can just put bring up another chair, Ms. Schlander.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Eric Hyland. I'm with the law firm of Meserly and Kramer, today representing the Alliance of Automotive Manufacturers. The Alliance is a trade association of 10 car and light truck manufacturers, including BMW, Chrysler, Ford, General Motors, Mazda, Mercedes-Benz, Mitsubishi Motors, Porsche, Toyota, and Volkswagen. I will be sensitive to the committee's jurisdiction and would just like to clarify a couple of things. I think it is important that you know what you're adopting. The California Clean Car Standards are essentially three separate standards. One is for emissions, and that's typically what we view as smog.
Our jurisdiction, Mr. Hyland, is whether or not we are going to allow Minnesota to go forward with adopting standards of another state, whether that's a good policy.
Okay.
Not the content. It could be on clean water. It could be adopting Michigan's law on ballast water. The issue is that a good public policy to allow Minnesota to consider stricter standards with regard to an issue, or should we have our own?
Madam Chair,
Mr. Hyland.
I understand, and I guess I would simply go to this, and this is getting to Senator Betzold's point. I do think this, what is presented to you in this piece of legislation, is a very unique situation where the state has oftentimes accepted general rules and guidelines from other organizations and put those into statute. This is essentially turning over the regulatory authority from the federal government, where I would argue we have a democratic process that works. We elect congressmen. We elect a president. They're accountable to people with election certificates. Instead of opting out of that, we are opting into a regulatory framework that the 11 folks who are appointed to the California Air Resources Board are accountable to no one in the state of Minnesota. They are accountable to the governor who appoints those people. And I guess that would be the public policy decision, I guess, as legislators you have to make.
Okay. Any questions from Mr. Hyland? Thank you. That's precisely the kind of testimony that's in the jurisdiction of this committee. Ms. Schlander.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Alyssa Schlander. I represent the Minnesota Auto Dealers Association. We are, if you didn't figure it out, we are the Minnesota businesses who are caught in the middle of this debate between the environmentalists and the automakers. Madam Chair, in trying to stick with your guidelines for testimony, I would just like to encourage you to reject this bill because of the uniqueness of adopting California's regulatory scheme. The bill says that the Minnesota PCA must incorporate by reference, that language must be identical to the California low emissions vehicle regulations adopted by the California Air Resources Board under California Code of Regulations Title 13. Madam Chair, members, it's hard to know what it is that we are adopting with that language, because if you go to California Code of Regulations Title 13, Title 13 contains almost 2,000 documents that regulate the quality of the air in California. But the sections of this bill, now Senator Marty has said over and over again, and I believe him, that this bill is only meant to regulate vehicle emissions. But those sections of California's Title 13 are not referenced in this bill, so it makes it very difficult to go to California's law to understand what portions of California's law we are going to be requiring the PCA to adopt here. So, Madam Chair, I would just urge members to just be cautious, because it's hard to know what we are adopting when we are making such a general reference to incorporating identical language. California's Code of Regulations, furthermore, regulates a whole host of things. Now, I know Senator Marty does not intend to regulate, farm equipment and leaf blowers and those types of things, but California does. And I would encourage you to think about how much cost something like that would incur on the state of Minnesota. This bill also requires Minnesota PCA to adopt future rule changes that the California regulators make. So, yes, today we are talking about vehicle emissions. If tomorrow California decides to start regulating something else, is Minnesota going to be able to keep up with the frequent rule changes that California makes? I think this bill will add significant costs to the people of Minnesota. It will certainly have a negative impact on our industry, and I would encourage you to reject this bill. Thank you.
Senator Marty?
Madam Chair, I'll just point out, I can give people, if they are interested in the provisions of Title 13 in California we'd be adopting, it does say in the bill the low emission vehicle regulations, and the industry's been saying, oh, this is going to affect paints, it's going to affect fireplaces. Fireplaces was the newest one I heard today. But there are things in California that regulate other emission sources. We're only adopting the low emission vehicle regulations, and that only affects new cars and light trucks. It does not affect, and we actually put in here to make people feel more comfortable, off-road vehicles, things like that. We make it very clear we're only adopting the low-emission vehicle regulations, not anything else. And we could, I could go into more detail, but there's been a lot of misinformation on it, and the bill simply states what we're taking.
Okay. Senator Day, did you have a question?
Madam Chair, and Senator Marty, first off, I really don't like your bill, but that's beside the point. I think it'll probably get a ways down the pike until something happens. But if you're really true to your own beliefs, why aren't you talking about snowmobiles and all-terrain vehicles and lawnmowers and aircraft and boats and everything else? Because you know as well as I do that will be a year from now. That's what we'll be discussing if this passes. That will be... it's only normal around here that'll be the next year and then the following year, and we will cover them all. So I guess the question is, why not just be totally up front and not try and, kind of bait us into this and then know that down the road we're going to have everything else? Because if you truly believe what you're trying to do, why wouldn't you want to do all the rest of them?
Senator Marty.
Chairman, Senator Day, I believe we can set our own standards in a number of other areas. We do not have to follow California. We can do tougher than the EPA with many types of environmental standards. For automobiles, we can only have one choice. That's why this bill is going after the one choice. For the greenhouse gas emissions, we only have the choice of California or federal. We can do things, we can regulate fireplaces, we can regulate paints, we can regulate all those other things, not under EPA and not under California. We can do our own on them. with automobiles, we have one choice, and this is about 30% of our greenhouse gas emissions are coming from automobiles, from transportation. So this is a major contributor to it. Again, if we could set our own standards separate from California, we might want to do that. But we don't have the choice here.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Marty. Can you tell us when the California standards were in place or first were enacted? And then the other question I have is I note here that the effective date, while is in 2008, it only affects motor vehicles the model year 2012 and later. And I'm curious if the California standard is in place currently and there's an experience or if they're on that same timeline.
Mr. Urkel.
Madam Chair, Senator.
You need to identify yourself, please.
My name is Jim Urkel, and I'm an attorney with the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, and I direct MCEA's Land Use and Transportation Program. California's regulation of mobile source emissions predates the Federal Clean Air Act. Those regulations have been going on for many, many years. The low emission two regulations that the greenhouse gas emissions are being added into were adopted in I believe 1998. The greenhouse gas portion of those regulations were developed between 2002 and 2004 and took effect in 2005.
Thank you.
The regulations or the greenhouse gas portion of the regulations are phased in under the regulations between model year 2009 and 2016 in order to allow manufacturers to ramp up with technology. Under the Clean Air Act, if we adopt California standards, our enforcement of those can only take effect two model years after we adopt the regulations. So that's why it kicks in 2012. But we would drop in into the phase-in at 212, we wouldn't be starting at 209 because of the preemption effect of the Clean Air Act.
Are there further questions, Senator Day?
Chair, and Senator Marty, if we wanted to get out of this after we're into it, how do we do that? And I guess the other question is, what if the federal government comes out with something that is a much better bill for Minnesotans. And, I mean, I don't know what you think, but
Senator Marty?
I had a son live in California for 9 years, and I don't know anything they've ever done out there that I matched up very well with, but maybe you must know that there's lots of things that you like about how they run their government. But I guess the question gets back to how would we get out?
Madam Chair, Senator Day, we're not adopting anything but these standards from California. We would get out of it the same way we get in. We would vote to do so. The federal law, if it was changed, if the EPA standards got tougher, which we're hoping, they've been following California. They've been several steps behind California for 30 years or so. And if they got tougher standards, I have a feeling they would be preempting California because I believe the standards are such that you have to be at least as tough as the federal law. California was given permission to be tougher than that, but if the federal law would have a better protection than California, I think we would all by default be covered by federal law.
Further questions or comments?
I don't have a pen.
Do we have an amendment? We didn't have any amendments, right? Senator Marty?
No, Madam Chair, I had an amendment, but I realized when I saw it that it was more not the jurisdiction of this committee. It was just, I guess, comfort language because of some people who are concerned about impact on the ethanol industry to make it clear that would not, but that's not technically this committee's jurisdiction, so I did not offer the amendment here.
Okay, that would be more in the jurisdiction of the Ag Committee.
Yeah, or transportation. But, Madam Chair, if there is no further discussion, I'd like to move that Senate File 481 be recommended pass referred to the Committee on Transportation.
Senator Marty moves that Senate File 481, as amended by the first and Grossman, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Transportation. Anyone else in the audience that wishes to speak in favor or in opposition to that motion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
Sometime I want to see this bill in agriculture because it's
The business committee wants to see it too, and but transportation wanted to see it, so we're sending it there first, and eventually it would get to your That's committee.
Fine. Madam Chair, I was going to say one thing. Let's hope we don't get like California. I think they got a $14 billion deficit. We've got enough trouble with $900.
We certainly do.
So, Madam Chair, as a technical matter, and Senator Marty, if it's got to go to possibly the Ag Committee and the Business Committee how and Transportation, and there's only 2 days left after today before second deadline, how does that get done?
It would go to the Rules Committee if it passes those other ones. If the committees agree to hear them, go to the Rules Committee as a late bill. So we have Senator Betzel.
But if the policy committees are not scheduled to meet after Wednesday, I don't know how they would hear it to send it to Rules Committee. But, okay.
Well, we are going to be meeting at least one more time to hear a couple of bills that are going to be late bills. Senator Marty.
And Madam Chair, Senator Betzel, we are trying to ask the chairs to bypass them because they're not technically the jurisdiction of those committees.
Okay. So we have Senator Marty's motion that Senate File 481, as amended by the first engrossment, be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Transportation. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails.
Division?
Division has been requested. All those in favor of the motion, please raise your hand.
Oh, favor. I'm sorry.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. All those opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The motion fails on a tie vote.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Senator Rolstein. Senator Rolstein brings us Senate File 3622.
Madam Chair, members, I'm here today on Senate File 3622, and the reason we're here is that it's local government authority. This is a bill that's got mainly to do with townships bidding. It extends the amount of money that they can go out for projects without a bid. So I have Ken Solom from the Township Association today to address the technical side of the bill.
And the issue that, again, brings it to us is just that it's a local government issue?
Yes, that is correct.
And is this the first committee, is that correct?
Madam Chair, it should be the first and only committee, I believe.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Senator Olsen, would you like for Mr. Solom to comment on the bill?
I would, Madam Chair.
Mr. Solom.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Ken Solom with the Minnesota Association of Townships. This bill was brought through our legislative process, but it is fully supported by all the local government associations, the League of Cities, the Association of Minnesota Counties, the school board groups, the School Transportation Association, or whatever their official title is. I also met prior to putting the bill in the hopper with one of the contractor groups, the ones that I knew how to get a hold of, and they said that they had no opposition to it and, in fact, found it to be a reasonable request. It was brought forward as a cost-saving measure because what's happening, particularly in the rural areas, but even in some of the near metro areas, we're spending hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars putting out advertising for bids, and we're getting zero bids or the same contractor each and every time. With the current threshold of $50,000. And so by increasing the threshold, we'll actually be saving tax dollars. We'll still have the process in place for sealed bids. What it does, the first three sections simply deal with a cross-reference that the reviser caught. About 8-9 years ago, we tried to get rid of all the individual dollar amounts and cross-reference the provision of law that is the contracting law, and apparently we missed one. So sections 1, 2, and 3 simply create the cross-reference to Chapter 471, 3, 4, 5, so we don't have to keep updating dollar amounts and other statutes. And then sections 4 through 8 deal with what the real objective is. Currently, under 10,000, we can buy on the open market. That increase would go to 25,000. Currently, between 10 and 50,000, we have to get two quotes. That would go to 25,000. And then over 50,000, we have to go to for sealed bids. That would be increased to 100,000. So it's just keeping the steps in line and giving us greater flexibility as a cost-saving measure. The other thing that happens is currently we are running into a lot of times where we're trying to buy used equipment, but it's sitting either at the 20,000 threshold, so we can't do it by direct negotiation on the open market, or at the 60,000, 70,000 threshold, and we end up having to go out and buy new because the used equipment is gone by the time we get through the bid process. So I know it sounds funny to say we're increasing things to save money, but that is the impact of this bill.
Senator Olsen or Mr. Sewell, when was the last time those amounts were increased?
Madam Chair, it was first term Ventura, so I believe that would have been about 99.
That's right.
And actually at that time, Madam Chair, the only threshold that was changed was the upper threshold, not the lower threshold. That threshold predates my career. I'm not sure of the exact.
So these amounts, I mean, that, you know, in section four, you're doubling it. Is that necessary to double it?
Madam Chair, I can speak to that. I live in a township, and I've chaired a number of annual township meetings. Mm-hmm. And a good example of that would be to if they want to purchase a tractor with a mower, you know, a hydraulic mower, and they've you know, with an air-conditioned cab, of course, and so all of these things, the prices have gone up dramatically. So I think that $25,000 is a pretty realistic number.
And, Madam Chair, so you said the contractor group that I met with did say it was reasonable for their thresholds.
Are there questions for Senator Olsen? Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience that wishes to speak in support or in opposition to Senate File 3622? Seeing none, Senator Lori. Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, I like to move these bills once in a while and give Senator Lori a break.
Okay. Senator
Township.
Pappas. Senator Pappas.
Oh, townships.
This is township.
Oh, okay, okay. Let him do
the next one.
A fight over who's going to.
He's the township guy.
Senator Lori moves that Senate File 3622, there are no amendments, be recommended to pass. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Olsen. Senator Kubley. No, he's last. He knows it. Senator Kubley brings us House File 3157.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I might
Chair
add before you begin that Senate File 2872 has been removed from our agenda if there's anyone here who was waiting for that bill. Senator Vanderveer. Senator Kubley, House File 3157.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 3157 simply deals with, giving some of the workload of one county officer to a different county officer. And with me today is Commissioner Brent Olsen from Big Stone County, and he'll give you a little rationale for the reasoning on the bill, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Brent Olsen. I'm a county commissioner from Big Stone County.
Welcome, Commissioner.
Thank you. This is when we have delinquent land that is delinquent property, it's handled by the treasurer up until the actual forfeiture. Then it's handled by the county auditor, which involves shifting of personnel and shifting of files. And we've gotten waivers the past 2 years from the state auditor to allow us to let the county treasurer to handle the whole process. And we would just like to formalize that so we don't have to keep getting waivers every year. The end result of this bill being passed is no cost to the taxpayer, and county government would function just a tiny bit more efficiently.
With regard to this authority, was there, and delinquent property taxes, was there a request for this bill to come to the tax committee? There has not been. Are there questions for Senator Kubley or the commissioner?
Madam Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
By passing this, it makes county government more efficient. A little bit. That's what
it means. At least
the bill
it makes Big Stone County. Any questions for Senator Kubley? Ari's witness, commissioner, is there anyone in the audience that wishes to speak either in support of or in opposition to House file? This is a House file that's come over, 3157. Seeing none, Senator Pappas moves that House file 3157 be recommended to pass. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Senator Marty, 3353.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate file 3353 is a bill dealing with long-term care COLAs. And I believe.
Why is it before us?
Pardon?
Why is it
before
this committee?
It's before us because of sections 11 and 12.
Okay.
And we have an
members
amendment that.
Members are directed to 11 and 12.
And we have an amendment that will change those two sections.
Okay. This is not the. Oh, it is the first committee. Is that correct?
This is the first committee. It,
okay,
it goes
so it
to
would be
my
an
committee. I don't know why I came here first, but it did.
Sections 11 and 12 are on page 15 and 16, and this is an author's amendment. It is
yes,
the
A1
amendment. Senator Marty moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the A1 amendment.
And
oh, wait a minute. At least members should have had it in front of them. I'm sorry.
And Madam,
I'll just give people a chance to look at it. He is deleting the current section 11 and rewriting that, and then some of the issues in apparently in section 12, and then adding a section 14.
And
they
Madam
all
Chair?
Have to do with rebasing.
And I'd be glad to speak to what the amendment is doing and how it affects the issues of this committee. There was a task force being created under Section 11, and we're instead changing it that because we have been planning to change our method, how we rebase the funding for nursing homes. And so prior to doing that, what we're asking is, well, we would have some hearings in our committees on this, and we asking representatives of the industry and consumers and employees together with commissioners of human services and so on to make recommendations to us. And the language that amends Section 12, instead of having the commissioners issue a report or have a working group, they would be taking recommendations and making them for the legislature to deal with this. That was designed instead of having a working group. The commissioners are fairly involved in this already, and I believe that we're asking them instead of convening a working group to consult with the community but then make recommendations, not an actual working group.
Well, Senator Marty, I am torn because we need, as an author's amendment, to adopt this as a courtesy, but your language is expressing legislative intent, which we tend to frown on.
Okay. Yeah.
I will support the motion, but I don't agree with it. And it seems like to me that they could do this without putting it in, even in session law. They don't need us to tell them to do that. But that's just me, and it's a courtesy. We will move the amendment. Senator Marty moves adoption of the A1 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. And the amendment is adopted. Senator Marty, why do we need that first? Why do we need the new section 11?
I'd like to have Ms. Freeman speak to...
No, I'm talking about legislative intent.
Right.
Why do we need to put legislative intent in the statute, even if it's in session law?
Madam Chair, members, my name is Iris Freeman, and I'm here for the Seniors and Workers for Quality Coalition, who is sponsoring the bill as a whole. Please say again what the specific question is.
We let the law speak for itself in terms of what the legislature's intent is. We do not put in the law a direction of what intent is or what the purpose is. We don't put purpose language in. The law itself should be enough to rely on with regard to intent. And we've had discussions in this committee, and I know they have them in other committees, and we usually take that kind of language out. But it seems to me that you could achieve, Senator Marty, your without that first sentence.
Yes.
If you just deleted that first sentence out of the A1 amendment.
Madam Chair, yes,
said,
I do not disagree.
Prior to the chairs will hold committee hearings, et cetera, then you state the same thing without having to say what the intent is.
Right. Madam Chair, I agree with you, and I'll move to strike that sentence.
Senator Marty moves to strike the lines 1.4 and 1.5. I don't know how you do that, but anyway, the whole first sentence. Who's doing that? Potter, are you doing that? So what would the proper wording for that be?
Madam Chair, the amendment would be to, on page 1 of the A1 amendment, delete line 4, and on page 5, delete everything before prior.
And on 1.5, delete everything before prior. Is that clear? All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails, and the amendment to the A1 amendment is adopted. So in the A1 amendment, again, on page 16, line 23, you're deleting the requirement for the report by December 15th and going to January 15th,
that's
which
correct,
we have been
Madam
commonly
Chair.
Doing. I just want to make sure I understand that.
Are we doing, Madam Chair, is it January 16th now?
Well, actually, you found out that January 16th is a Friday, so 15th is a Thursday, so it works. We just shouldn't be, we were trying to avoid having it on a Saturday or a Sunday, so that works. Any other questions about Senate File 3353 and the reporting mechanism, et cetera? Senator Marty, where does this...
This would go to the Health and Housing Family Security Committee, again,
okay.
Which I would have guessed was the first committee. I don't know why it ended up here first, but I would move that Senate File 3353 as amended be recommended pass referred to the Committee on Health, Housing, and Family Security.
Senator Marty moves that Senate File 3353 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Health, Housing, and Family Security. Any further discussion? Anyone in the audience again wishes to testify in favor or in opposition to this bill? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very
much. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Senator Buck. We're going to take my two bills last, Senator Buck, instead of yours. Although yours deserve to go last. Senator Bach, Senate File 3291.
Madam Chair, it's a pleasure to be here with you.
Right. It'll be my pleasure to be in front of your committee tomorrow. I couldn't
You'd be right.
Miss you quite as much as I would have liked.
Madam Chair, Senate File 3291 makes the state building code applicable across the state. Doesn't require municipalities to adopt it. Small municipalities under 2,500 people would not have to enforce the code, but the builder would be required to build to the state building code. That's currently not the case. So what we've found around the state is there are places where, because communities haven't adopted the state building code, people don't build to the standard, and the homeowner oftentimes is the one that ends up with a building that doesn't meet the standard that I think we all think it should. So there is a small amendment, Madam Chair, that I think clarifies a couple things. It is the A3 amendment.
Do we have the A3 amendment, Council? Senator Bach, we don't have the A3 amendment, apparently. Do you have a copy of it?
Yes, I do.
You want to give it to Paige, and she can make copies of it really fast?
Maybe, Madam Chair, we can have some testimony on the bill while we wait.
That would be fine. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record. And this is that it's not the first committee, so we do need to discuss the amendment. Please identify yourself.
Madam Chair, members, I'm Lisa Frenette. I represent the Builders Association Minnesota. This is a very basic bill. It's trying to round up builders that currently don't build to the code in the outstate areas. They tend to be licensed unlicensed builders, and it's currently state law for a builder to be licensed. It does not require any unfunded mandates on counties or townships that that do not currently opt into the code. It does, however, clarify and allow them to do joint powers agreements with each other so that they can have one inspector. If they opt not to have an inspector of their own, the Department of Labor and Industry will help them out in that sense and come up and inspect if they choose to administer and enforce the action. But it does make the statewide building code the standard, which all licensed builders should be building to in the state.
Are there questions for Ms. Frenette? Is there anyone else who wishes to speak in favor in opposition to Senate File 3218? Then we'll just wait just a second for the amendment to be distributed. So tell us what the amendment does, Senator Bach, and then we will.
Madam Chair, what the amendment does, the on line 1.2, it changes an or to an and.
1.2, or we have page 3, line 12.
Oh, 3.12. Look, I'm looking at the amendment. On line 3.12 on the first engrossment, it changes an or to an and.
3.12. Okay, so it's page 3, line 12, right?
Correct. And Madam Chair, the issue is there are a number of small lumber mills around the state, especially when you get in the north, and often sell to the end consumer. And because they're not big enough to have gone through the expense of getting their lumber stamped and graded, which is a requirement of the code, this requires them to certify in writing to the end consumer and the builder. It said or before, and the builder, that that their material is got the kind of, well, you can see the things on the lines below relative to moisture content and the grade of the lumber, even though it doesn't have the official grade and stamp on it.
Okay, and then the second part of it on page 7, line 26.
The second part way the language was drafted, it could be construed as that people would have to collect, an individual might be charged for fees twice, and the amendment makes it clear that if the municipality collects the fee, then labor and industry can't collect the fee.
Okay, and the phrase eliminates double dipping.
Of fees.
Double dipping of fees is not part of the amendment. It was just meant to be an explanation. Okay, let's make that clear. Is there anyone who has a question about the A3 amendment? Seeing none, Senator Pappas moves the A3 amendment. All those in favor of the A3 amendment, please say aye.
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 All those opposed? The motion prevails, and the A3 amendment is adopted. We have, then, Senate File 3291, as amended, before us. Senator Pappas moves that Senate File 3291, as amended, be recommended to pass. Once again, is there anyone who wishes to speak in support or in opposition to this bill? Seeing none, we have the Pappas motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator Bach. Senator Bach, we now have Senate File 3218, Workers' Compensation Advisory Council Recommendations Adoption.
Madam Chair, these are, Senate File 3218, are the recommendations of the Workers' Comp Advisory Council. And everything in the bill has been agreed to by a majority of the labor members and the business community that sit on the advisory council. There is a small amendment to this also. It's a recodification. It's the A1.
Senator Bach, when the bill went to business, industry, and jobs, it was referred to this committee without amendment?
Correct.
So we have a bill currently without an amendment.
Correct.
The A1 amendment, say again what it does, since this is not the committee of original jurisdiction.
And council needs to tell me what the numbers are, but it's a recodification that moves a provision from the labor and industry sections in statute to commerce, where there is some regulation relative to workers' compensation. And council can probably explain it better than I can.
It's the same. Okay. Mr. Bodern, any further comment on the A1 amendment?
Madam Chair, I don't think I have anything further to add. What Senator Bach said is correct.
Okay. Senator Pappas moves the A1 amendment to Senate File 3218. Those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Is there anyone who wishes to speak either in support or in opposition to Senate File 3218 as amended? I note that Mr. Rakowski is here from the Department of Labor and Industry, if members have questions for him.
Madam Chair, the bill is here because it gives the commissioner some added rulemaking authority in Section 7.
Okay. Members can – let's look at Section 7, which is on which page?
13.
Section 7 begins on page 11. And
the language is on page 13.
And the language is on page 13 at the bottom of the page.
Madam Chair, there's
the notices of the adjusted conversion factors. Let's see. Oh, it starts early. Shall give annually notice in the state register of the adjusted conversion factors and any amendments to rules to implement Medicare relative value tables incorporated by reference under this subdivision. and the notices and amended rules, et cetera. What is that about, Senator Bach?
Madam Chair, there is a fee schedule that labor and industry uses for reimbursements for providers in the workers' comp system. Mm-hmm. And from time to time, there are changes in that fee schedule, maybe renumbering of things or maybe some additional services that weren't covered before that have a new number. And so this just makes it clear that the commissioner has the authority to do that by rule rather than coming back to the legislature
and changing the statutes. I understand also that the section, 10? Why is Section 10 relevant, Mr. Bonner?
Madam Chair and members, Section 10 just clarifies that where the Commissioner of Labor and Industry is providing medical treatment equipment, et cetera, for an employee that was insured or did not have workers' compensation insurance, those procedures are exempt from state purchasing law.
Okay. Any question about the provisions in Section 10? Is there any other section of the bill that is relevant to this committee?
Madam Chair, there are other technical changes relating to references in some of the rulemaking authority, but that's it.
Okay. Any questions of Senator Bach on Senate File 3218? Senator Day.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the bill.
Senator Day moves that Senate File 3218, as amended, be recommended to pass. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee.
We now have the end of our agenda. I guess those are my bills.
We have Senate File 3373, partial election recounts. Take up Senate File 3238. Precinct caucus dates. Delete all for Senate File 3238. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman and members. And I do want to take up Senate File 3238. And it does deal with changes in the law with regard to how precinct caucus dates are selected. As you know, we passed earlier an exemption for local governments for this year only from having to hold the caucuses on March 4th, which was in statute. When we moved to the caucuses, ignoring state law, had their caucuses on February 5th. Senate File 3238 is going to do is to make the statute conform to the ability of the major political parties to.
You're describing the delete all amendment to us,
That's in the delete all amendment, and I would move the A2 amendment.
Senator Russ moves the author's A2 amendment. All those in favor, aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Please continue, Senator Rust.
Mr. Chairman, that it's fairly simple and straightforward, I think, to allow them to do that so that the chairs of the, I'll just go through that, of the two largest major political parties will submit to the Secretary of State a proposal on when precinct caucuses will be held, and the on March 1st of that of each odd number year, the Secretary of State will announce what that date will be. So they do need to have it a decision on that essentially a year in advance, but it is not something that would be dictated by the legislature. It would be an agreement by the major political parties. The second part of the amendment that we adopted is a slightly different issue, and it's present in it is present in another bill, and I'm adding it in committee to this bill, and it has to do with campaign material that must include closed captioning for the deaf and hard of hearing viewers. We have been doing in this state a lot of outreach, and we've heard bills with regard to increasing the independence of voters with disabilities to be able to participate in the process in the voting booth, and this also would allow for them to participate in the same way as other as the rest of us who do not have hearing difficulties, to the extent where we would benefit from closed captioning. There are some of us who have hearing difficulties, but we, such as myself, but who do not need closed captioning. But I would, I'd like to have some testimony on this particular issue, since it is actually coming to us from another bill.
Yes, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and offer your testimony. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Cynthia Weitzel, and I am with the Commission Serving Deaf and Hard of Hearing People here in Minnesota. And I appreciate the opportunity to testify on behalf of the deaf, hard of hearing, and deafblind communities. And thank you, Senator Rust, for your support. The Minnesota Commission Serving Deaf and Hard of Hearing People has been trying for the last 6 years, in collaboration with grassroots organizations of deaf, hard of hearing, and deafblind individuals around Minnesota. We have been advocating for access to the process of voting, to make it accessible for deaf, hard of hearing, and deafblind people. You have handouts that have a list, a breakdown of voluntary efforts of what we've been doing to make the participation in the process accessible and to engage voters in the community, starting in 2002 and leading up to the present election cycle. Nearly 10% of Minnesota's population is deaf or significantly hard of hearing. The largest percentage is over the age of 60. According to the U.S. Census in 2004, the highest voting demographic was in the 60 to 75 year age range. 92.2% of them voted. Of that group, one-third of the voters have a serious hearing loss severe enough that they rely upon captioning to understand the spoken word in visual media. There's been a significant increase over the past 6 years in this group. The largest group of veterans with service-connected disabilities have service-connected hearing loss. And that's been true in each war that we've had. The largest group of disabled veterans have hearing loss. Hearing loss is their disability. The U.S. Veterans Administration recently reported that 58,000 Iraq war vets from the United States have been given permanent full disability status because of hearing loss that they acquired while serving in the war. Since 1995, the federal campaign finance law has mandated that presidential candidates who receive funds must caption their ads. Other states have passed similar laws, Rhode Island, Florida, California. Captioning for web ads costs $10 a minute for a web ad. Captioning for up to a 15-minute ad on television is approximately $200. That's a small cost compared to the tremendous cost of producing an ad. This year, the Minnesota Commission for Deaf and Hard of Hearing People is working in collaboration with the Secretary of State's office to increase voter outreach and civic engagement. Because of it is a presidential election year and there are races for Congress and Senate, excitement in the community of deaf and hard of hearing people is mounting. They want and deserve to be a part of the process. The commission has advocated for voluntary captioning, and this has not been successful. A mandate is needed.
Thank you. Senator Rust, any questions of members?
Mr. Chairman, I think the testimony was very eloquent and compelling as to the need and the benefit at very, very low cost to candidates and or any others that put political ads on our electronic media of any kind. And I would hope that the committee would support the bill as amended.
Any questions of members? Seeing none, Senator Rust moves Senate File 3238 as amended, be recommended to pass and sent.
Period.
Anyone from the audience care to speak either in favor or in opposition to Senate File 3238? Seeing none, we have Senator Rust's motion before us. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Chair?
Thank you.
We have anything to do? I do have one thing I'd like to bring up. Not on this bill.
Okay. Senator Betzold.
Senator Marty's bill failed on a tie vote on a recommendation that it pass. Let me refer to the Transportation Committee. I'm willing to move it without recommendation.
Senator Betzold.
So I move, having voted on the prevailing side, which the bill failed on a tie vote. I move that the vote for Senate File 4A1 be reconsidered.
Senator Betzold moves that the vote by which Senate File 481
failed
be reconsidered. All those in favor of Senator Betzold's motion, aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, I'll move that Senate File 481 be sent without recommendation to Transportation.
Senator.
Mr. Chair.
Senator
Vickerman. Where's the bill going?
Transportation.
I want to be on record. I want this in my Ag Committee.
That's on record, Senator Vickerman. Any other questions of members? We have Senator Betzold moves that Senate File 481 be passed to the Committee on Transportation without recommendation. Any other questions from members? We've already opened it up to the audience. Everyone understand Senator Betzold's motion? All those in favor? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Rust, we have Senate File 3373 left to do.
Chairman, a lot of activity on this bill today.
That's the best kind of bill.
Yeah, because we're 5-4.
A lot of people stamped out of the room.
I believe I have a delete all amendment, which satisfies the concerns that have been raised about Senate File 3373.
We're getting the delete all passed out right now.
Okay.
This amendment.
And so I have two amendments. One is a delete all amendment, if we can have that. Okay. And then the second amendment, which would also be an author's amendment, is the same language that we just passed with regard to campaign material, including captioning. I'm trying to put it in two different places, again, since it is part of two election bills going to the Senate floor.
So this is the first time this bill has been heard. So
that's right. So
these are
author's
amendments.
Author's amendments.
Senator Rust moves.
I move the delete all amendment if I could have a copy of it.
The A4 delete all amendment. I think we all have a copy. So
I don't.
But we'll go. But we'll go ahead and act, I think.
Ms. Chairman?
She's a voter.
Mr. Watson?
Before you act, there was a change in Section 5 of the A4 amendment that I haven't had the time to get incorporated into it, and I think we should probably make that change.
Let's make that change.
Before it's adopted.
Okay.
On page 2, lines 28 to 32, just delete all the new language. We would not be making any change in that part, so no new language on page 2, lines 28 to 32. And then on page 3, at the top of the page, delete the new language on lines 1 to 3 and reinstate the stricken language on line 2. So that all remains old law.
So, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Watson, so the only new language in Section 5 is lines 3.7 through 3.10.
That is correct.
Okay.
And then on the A1 amendment, that was originally drafted to the other bill that you just took. So instead of going on page 2 after line 6, this would fit on page 3 after line 11, and it would be section number 6.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Watson, do you want to change the Senate file number 2 and 1-1?
Yes.
Yes, and this is actually an amendment to the SCS 3373A4 amendment to Senate file 3373.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, then I move, first of all, the A4 amendment incorporating the changes that with regard to Section 5 on page 2.
Senator Rust moves the A4 author's amendment incorporating the edits as described by Mr. Watson. Everyone understand the motion? Any questions? All those in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
And then, Mr. Chairman, as another author's amendment, I move the A1 amendment with the correct,
Senator
references.
Rust moves the author's A1 amendment with the edits suggested by Mr. Watson. Any questions of members? Everyone understand this motion? All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Now
Mr.
should
Chairman,
have the bill in shape.
The A5 amendment, this bill deals with recounts and also the notion of review of elections, audits of review of elections. We have had a bill in front of our committee to do that. And the provisions are now in Senate File 2574 on the floor. It would be my intent on the floor to remove the new language. I'm going to keep it here now, but so that we have this committee has a position on it, and I hope this isn't too complicated. I'll be removing Section 5 that we just adopted and putting it together with the other section dealing with the review of elections. We were talking about that in terms of doing it in a timely fashion so that we didn't have reviews of elections going, audits of elections going on while we were, that would take longer than was required in order to get to the selection of our electors and their being able to cast their votes. So that bill is already on its way. It would be my intent to add this Section 5 to that bill on the Senate floor and probably delete it from this one. But I wanted there to be a hearing on this before we did that. So eventually this language will appear somewhere. It may not end up still being in this bill. So I don't think it's controversial. I'm just trying to explain if you see an amendment coming up on 2574, it's going to be the language from that okay. one section of this bill as it goes forward. And this bill will only be talking about recounts and then the captioning for the deaf and hard of hearing.
Okay.
And I will make sure that those two sections, the one section that's already in 2574 and this one, which is Section 5 of this bill, are consistent with one another.
Today you're trying to move the just bill as we now have it before us through this committee.
Make okay. sure the committee knows what I'm going to be doing.
And did you have additional testimony?
We have another suggestion for an amendment, which I would also offer, and this is at a suggestion from the Secretary of State's office. On line 3.8 of the A4 amendment, to delete candidates and by, so that the sentence would read, if the selection of precincts by lot has not resulted in the selection of at least four precincts, etc. So on line 3.8, delete candidates and by. Mr. Chairman, I move that amendment.
I think that's pretty clear. Everyone understand it. Any questions? Seeing none, Senator Rest moves her oral amendment. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, then I will let Mr. Mansky and Mr. Halverson just talk to you about briefly about the notion of why it would be important to change the way in which we are doing recounts.
Welcome,
Mr. Committee. Chairman. My name is Joe Mansky, and I'm actually here today representing the county auditors. As Senator Rest indicated, this bill has really two parts to it. Number one is dealing with what we call optional or discretionary recounts. And I think that you know that if you're running for a state or a federal office and you lose by a small margin, you get a recount automatically. However, it is always possible to recount any race. And so what we're talking about here today are races which are above the margin that you'd get an automatic recount and that the state or the county would pay for. And what we're suggesting here is that when a candidate is asking for a discretionary or an optional recount, that it would be useful to allow the candidate to indicate to the recount official at least three precincts that they would like to see right off the bat. And the reason for this is in many of these optional recounts, the losing candidate just may have a question about the vote count or the compilation in a couple of precincts that maybe don't look right. and rather than having the full-blown recount, which can be time-consuming and cost a lot of money, we would like to provide the candidate with the option of telling us, if you would just do these two or three precincts, that may be all I will need to see in order to come to the conclusion that everything is okay. And on the odd case where we make a mistake and they determine that as a result of doing one of these optional recounts that it reverses the outcome of the race, that in that case that the jurisdiction conducting the recount would pay for it, which we think is fair. The other thing that we're proposing to do here or suggesting to you is something that we have really done kind of as a cultural practice for the last 20 years, and that is when we conduct a recount using optical scan voting equipment, although we use the equipment to actually get the count of the numbers, that is the less important thing. The more important thing is to see how the ballots were marked. And that's really what the candidates and the attorneys want to see. And again, informally, we have done that, even though the law did not require it. But our suggestion to you today is to codify that practice, and that in every recount where an optical scan system is used, that the losing candidate or the winning candidate and the attorneys get to actually see the ballots, see how every ballot is marked, and then run them through the ballot counter. Again, the vote count here is less important to them than being able to see that we were able to pick up a vote no matter how it was marked on the ballot. And I think some of you may know that you occasionally get a voter who will circle the candidate's name or they'll mark an X outside of the target. And our voting equipment is unable to read that, but upon visual inspection, we are able to count those votes, and we would like to be able to do so.
Mr. Chairman?
Thank you. Senator Pappas?
If the machine doesn't read it, does it kind of kick it out so the voter votes again, or so you're alerted that it needs to be manually counted?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, you ask a very interesting question. When we first started to use the optical scan equipment, we used to reject those ballots for exactly the reason that you suggest, and that is people who are marking outside the target. And what we found was in the early years that there were relatively small number of ballots where that was the case. But what we were doing was we were, in a fashion, disclosing how someone may have voted if they chose not to vote for that office at all. And so what we decided to do, and this goes back now.
Oh, because it would be kicked out.
That's correct. What we did was changed our administrative rules 20 years ago, basically, to say that if you undervote an office, we're not going to return it. We're going to assume that you wanted to undervote it, and you have the right to do that secretly. Now, in the recounts that we have done in subsequent years, again, what we found is that we have a small number of ballots on which the ballots are marked outside of the target, but that number has not gotten to the point where it's such a great number that we would want to.
The election.
And basically, if you remember the Wilson Garza race, this is for the St. Paul City Council. Yes. That was the crux of this issue.
Thank you. Wilson. Did you have more testimony, Senator Rust?
Mr. Halverson, and whose group was the major advocates for the original bill as introduced, but who has worked with the Secretary of State's office and with Mr. Mansky today very graciously to come up with a bill that the Senate can support. So I would like for him to speak briefly.
Mr. Halverson, would you like?
Yep. Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Mark Halverson. I'm the Director of Citizens for Election Integrity Minnesota, a statewide nonpartisan organization. I want to first of all commend Mr. Mansky for initially proposing this idea and for Senator Russ for carrying this amendment. We believe this amendment would provide further assurances to any losing candidate that they lost in a fair and an accurate manner and would boost public confidence in the election results. If the election results showed a wide variation in voting patterns in any of the precincts, we're confident that losing candidates would be able to detect this, and this amendment provides a way for those losing candidates to have those precincts examined in a very, very targeted manner. The only costs incurred would be by the county or state if the the overall results were overturned as a result of a significant number of discrepancies. Otherwise, the only cost would be, other than that, costs would be incurred by the losing candidate. If the results were overturned, I believe the cost to the county and the state, I think that would be money well spent to verify the accuracy of election outcome. I did a survey of the four most recent Minnesota State Senate elections, and that shows that on average, this law would cover six races in any given election year in the Minnesota State Senate. So we're not talking about a large number of races just for the Senate. I didn't do an analysis beyond that because that's a pretty large task. Also, I think it's unlikely that all candidates would exercise this option. In conclusion, I believe this amendment offers a simple and effective way to resolve any concerns or questions about the accuracy of the outcome and will help to maintain voter and candidate confidence in the results. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Halverson. Any questions of members? Seeing none, Senator Rust.
Mr. Chairman, then I would move that Senate File 3373, as amended, be recommended to pass.
Senator Rust moves Senate File 3373, as amended, be recommended to pass. Anyone from the audience care to speak either in favor or in opposition to this file? Seeing none, Senator Rust's motion is before us. All those in favor, aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, you may adjourn the committee.
There being no more business before our committee, the committee stands adjourned. No. Thank you,
Senator. No, for sure. Great. Sorry to bother you on the last day here.
It's okay.